HawkeyeInsider.com, David Eicholt, Sean Bock, just leaving Kinnick Stadium following Iowa's 24-7 loss against Purdue. Really a slow start for Iowa today, and Sean, I think you and I both had the early indication that things were going to be in trouble for Iowa today with the early interception, Iowa going on that 17-play drive that resulted in a 25-yard missed field goal. And then, you know, you and I talked about it all week on Hawkeye Insider, David Bell, probably the single-handedly most impressive wide receiver I've seen on a consistent basis against Iowa. 11 receptions for 240 yards and a touchdown, and it certainly felt like he had 240 yards.
Yeah, honestly, I'm gonna go the other way with this one, but you know, you look at the stat sheet in the first quarter, and you're kind of like, holy cow, or maybe in the first half, you say, holy cow, like David Bell, like where did these numbers come from? Because you know, you didn't really realize it. Obviously, you knew that he was potentially prone to have a big game, but you know, until you saw the stats, and the second half performance was ridiculous too. And I think, yeah, you know, when he had that reception against Hankins where Hankins went down, I think that was, you know, an indicator of what kind of day he could have. Because I mean, Hankins he's been okay when it comes to tackling this year. He's had kind of a, you know, he's been all right, but you know, David Bell just kind of made him look silly on that one play. And you know, that's not a disservice to Matt Hankins. Obviously, you know, it's football, stuff like that happens. But, you know, I think that drive, too, you talked about with Caleb Shudak ending it, you know, missing that 25-yard field goal. That was definitely a tough look. And, you know, I think that's where things, you know, you kind of got the vibe that, you know, these are where things are going to go. And that's never really a good feeling to have.
No, and you're exactly right. And I mean, Aiden O'Connell I thought was tremendous today too.
Was,
I mean,
very good.
Iowa did not get the pressure that they needed to on the quarterbacks, but Aiden O'Connell was delivering absolute darts downfield. And I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Jeff Brohm, they were doing the three quarterback system essentially, but you know, one of them only came in for the specialty packages and whatnot, but For Aiden O'Connell and Jack Plummer to be as consistent as they were despite, you know, switching in and out, it was impressive. And I think you do have to give a lot of credit to Purdue. But it was just one of those days where Iowa thrives on complimentary football. And I think Kirk said it best postgame. They didn't play anywhere near their potential in any phase of the game besides returning. I mean, Ivory Kelly Martin had that 67-yarder. Charlie Jones had a 40-plus-yarder punt return. I mean, they did some nice things. But Iowa thrives off, you know, like I said, complimentary football and using the juice that one side creates to keep that momentum going forward. I mean, that's why Iowa, after getting turnovers, they score. We've seen, you know, big plays after big plays in subtle ways over the course of the year for this Iowa team. But there was really none of those today outside the returns. I mean, yeah, Tyler Goodson ripped off a nice run. Keegan Johnson from the first play had that 38-yarder. But Iowa's offense just, you know, I think you need to give a lot of credit to Purdue's defense. George Karloftis was an absolute monster today. He won't get the credit that he deserves in the stat sheet, but he was an absolute problem for Iowa's offensive line today.
Yeah, and I talked about that in one of my post-game notes that, you know, offensive line, we've seen it this year. It's been a struggle for Iowa at times. You know, I wouldn't say, you know, there's some games where there's promise, but there's other games where you're just kind of like, when is there going to be some sort of consistency? And there, you know, a lot of people will blame it on the rotation, stuff like that, but I don't think that plays a part of it. I think there's just inexperience in this group. I think at the tackle position, there's reason for some concern. You know, I don't think you disagree. Obviously, Purdue has a pretty good defense, and I think during media availability this week when Ken O'Keefe was talking, Iowa's quarterback coach, you know, people were asking him about backup quarterbacks, you know, how have these guys look, but every answer would go back to Purdue and what Iowa's doing to game plan for Purdue. And, you know, at the time you're kind of like, answer the question, like, I get it, but, you know, you want them to answer that question, but it's like, they were valid concerns and valid, you know, the coaching staff was focused on Purdue, locked in and worried about Purdue because Ken O'Keefe even said, like, they had potential to be one of the better defenses they played this year. And
which sounds crazy for a typical Purdue team that we've seen over the course of the last few years. I mean, outside of a few big playmakers, I mean, it's just it's a different vibe. And, you know, I'll say this too about Carl Loftus. I mean, he only had one tackle, one sack, but he had three quarterback hits, but it was just about the constant pressure he was generating in the Iowa's backfield. And like you said, I think Iowa's interior line is solid for the most part. But I mean, Sean, how many plays do we see a day where Tyler Linderbaum was literally the only guy holding his block?
There were a couple of them from what I remember. And I do think the interior of the line's been solid. I mean, Justin Britt has been here and there. Connor Colby, you know, I'm not sure what his whole situation is. He played the first drive, but do you remember him going in much the rest of the game? I think there was one drive where he came in and the run looked a lot better. But outside of that, you know, you don't really think of many notable moments when he was in there, because I think Britt, Schott, and Colby are those top three guys. Mm-hmm. But just at the tackle position is where I'm concerned a little bit. I think Nick DeYoung and Mason Richmond are going to be very solid players in due time, but the inexperience and the struggles, they've been very notable. And you know, that's I don't know what that goes back to. I mentioned inexperience, they're still young, but you know, you got to be able to produce. And I'm not hating on them, but it's kind of just been up and down this year. And it, you know, in games like this too, where it's fully exposed.
Yep. And that was one, like you said, you talked about that with Carl Loftus. I mean, he was the most elite edge rusher Iowa's played this year. Yes. The Penn State edge rusher, 17, was really, really solid as well. I think he had 3.5 tackles for loss in that game, maybe a sack or two. He was really good. But like you said, I think Mason Richmond has a high ceiling. I think he's continuing to get experience. I think Nick DeYoung, I think he's a moderate to high floor caliber guy, but there's only so much of a ceiling you're gonna get with him. Because I mean, you look down the list at guys like, you know, David Koff. We saw Bo Stevens warming up with the two. He's a guard, but he's warming up with the backups. I mean, there's a lot of guys, Sean, that Iowa's gonna bring in, they have in the system, that just need a little bit more time to really get it going. So I do think Nick DeYoung, I think there's gonna be a legitimate tackle competition for a spot next year. And again, that's no shot against him whatsoever. But that's the way I think it's going to need to shake out. And we need to talk about the offense, too, a little bit. Sean, I think there's a couple ways we can go with this. But I think there's a lot of talk about Spencer Petras after this game. Rightfully so, to some extent. He had 4 interceptions, a career high. I think 3 of them came in the fourth quarter. 2 of them came within the final 5 minutes. While he wasn't good, he was 17 of 32, 195 yards, 4 picks. I think people are still putting a little bit too much on him. I think it was a very bad combination of things today. Now, certainly, he does need to be held accountable for it, and I think he's the first guy to admit that he was not good today, and that's what he said in front of the media. But, Sean, we've seen over the course of his career, if the pocket's not clean, he's not going to be able to make these throws, and the pocket was not clean today whatsoever.
Yeah, and he tried to get outside the pocket a little bit with some of his throws, but, you know, he ended up just, you know, taking the safe option. You know, that's not a bad play. Like, that's not a bad play, but you see some of these other guys and some of the throws that they're able to make. I'm not knocking on Petras because I think he can make a lot of throws, but yeah, it's just like the difference between a clean pocket and a collapsed pocket for him is night and day. And, you know, that's the case for a lot of quarterbacks, almost every quarterback, but you really got to have a clean pocket with Petras back there. And that goes back to having mobile quarterbacks. I'm not saying that Iowa needs to change up their scheme completely, but, you know, that's just kind of how Petras is. When the pocket is clean, he is so much more efficient. That's just his play style.
Mm-hmm.
And Purdue did a great job game playing for that. They were constantly getting pressure on him and making him really uncomfortable. You know, maybe it wasn't always resulting in sacks, but they were just constantly in the backfield. It felt like every play, it felt like Petras was on his toes. I think they had 4 sacks, and they came into this game with 7 sacks on the year in 4 games.
Yeah.
Which is very impressive if you look at the numbers. I think Carl Loftus led the team with 8 hurries on the year, 8 quarterback pressures, and he had a number of those today as well. And, you know, I talked about in my keys all week long that it's going to be Carl Loftus versus the Iowa tackles. Purdue likes to move Carl Loftus around. He's not just going to terrorize you on one different side. He's going to move around. He's going to make life difficult for you. Whether, you know, depends what gap he shoots. Like, he's going to find ways to get to the quarterback. And he did just that, and Iowa couldn't find ways to contain it. And, you know, you talk about Purdue as well. Their offensive line did a spectacular job.
Yeah, they did.
They did a magnificent job. I'm really intrigued to look at those Pro Football Focus grades tomorrow because they were really impressive. And it showed what Aiden O'Connell did. Because, I mean, Aiden O'Connell is a pocket passer, but he can also move around a little bit. And he, you know, he moved around here and there, but he had a clean pocket.
He was very good.
And, you know, a lot of that goes back to the offensive line play and how they did.
I'm very intrigued to see some of the one-on-one reps, even though, you know, again, even if Iowa didn't win them, I'm very curious to see what some of those did because, like you said, Iowa really didn't generate much pressure. I don't really, you know, remember them blitzing too often because I think they were so worried about David Bell and Milton Wright and those guys, Sean. But, yeah, I mean, I think Purdue did a great job of trying to get George Karloftis involved and really keep him on his toes. And you know what, you know, Sean, as you were talking, I really thought about this. What Purdue's defensive line did to Iowa is exactly how what I felt like Iowa's defensive line did to Michael Penix in the Indiana. That, you know, they forced mistakes. Petras at times, I think he thought the pocket was collapsing when it wasn't collapsing. Now, I think Purdue did a better job of getting a little bit more pressure on it, on him. But it was very similar the more I think about it. So, again, I'm intrigued to go back and look at the film. And, you know, Sean, I think, you know, another thing before we hop over the defense and, you know, talk about just the secondary and what really happened there. Keegan Johnson, I mean, I think he really needs – I think there needs to be some strong consideration that, you know, with all due respect to Tyrone Tracy, they need production from receivers. And Tyrone was entering the season as number one guy. I still think he can be the leader of that room based on everything I'm hearing. But, Sean, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about producing. And if you look at the numbers right now, Tyrone's just not – he's just not producing at the level that certainly he expects, but I think Iowa expects. And you look at Keegan Johnson's low snap counts – and then, granted, they're getting better by the week. I think he had 32 last week. I don't know how many he had today. The Pro Football Focus grades will really be a big indicator of that. But what Keegan's done in his limited opportunities, I mean, he's – Sean, I mean, he's Iowa's most explosive wide receiver probably on the list.
And he's got 5 or 6 receptions on the year?
6, yeah.
6 receptions on the year. And a lot of those have been, like, big yards after catch.
Yeah.
Big yards after catch, even big yards after contact. There's been those, and you know, did Tracy have a target today?
I think he had one catch. I know they handed him the ball on this on end around. Let me pull up my stat broadcast real quick. I mean, Grant, I need to look at more closely about how they're covering him, and stuff. But
initial reaction is, you know, he's the top receiver. He was supposed to be the top receiver coming in this year.
But I don't know if he had a target. But I don't see that he had a reception.
Okay.
It says there's 32 targets on the list. Tracy's not listed, but again, I'm not going to, you know, go into that. He had one carry for a yard, and that was the only thing I can really remember him doing.
Yeah, that's a little concerning, you know, not being able to get the ball to your playmakers. And, you know, like you said, defenses have done a good job of guarding him, and we'd like to see more of how they've done that. But you know, it's valid reason to be concerned about, you know, him being so limited because he was supposed to be the guy this year. And it just hasn't gone his way. And, you know, I don't know if that's a system thing, you know, him and Petras aren't on the same page, what the deal is, but he is the top guy in the room. And we've seen him in the past. We've seen him against Northwestern. We've seen him against Wisconsin. We've seen him in other big games where he's made that big play.
Yeah.
And we just haven't seen that this year, and that's what the Iowa offense is missing. I wish I had the stats in front of me, but I would be surprised if Iowa wasn't near the bottom of the league when it comes to
explosive plays.
Explosive plays and just chunk plays of over 20-plus yards.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, like I said, I wish I had the stats in front of me as well. I think Tyler Goodson's had a handful. He had a 32-yard carry day. I still think Iowa has a lot of room to grow in the running game. But again, if they don't have good tackles, it can be difficult to really get that going. But, you know, and Kirk said after the game, he felt like the running game has been growing the past 2 weeks. And to some degree, I do understand it because, you know, Tyler's getting these 6 yards, these 8 yards, and then generating a couple of explosive plays. And I think Tyler's done a much better job of not dancing in the backfield. He has really attacked the opening strong, and he's been getting some of those yards that earlier in the year he really didn't do. But again, only 12 carries, had 68 total yards. And again, to be fair to Kirk and Brian, they really got to a point where they had to throw the ball because they were down by so much. They couldn't, you know, eat the clock. Like I said, I got really bad feeling for Iowa when they didn't produce points on that 17-play drive that lasted, what, 7.5 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
But, you know, flipping over the defense, Sean, man, I mean, I said this on a couple of radio programs and stuff earlier in the week that Iowa's got to find David Bell the second he crossed the state line, follow them to the hotel, follow him at team meals. I wasn't joking. And you look at what he did today. I mean, and Kirk said it might have been the most impressive wide receiver performance he's ever seen. And
well, it was the best one at Kinnick in his tenure.
Yep.
Set a Kinnick Stadium record for most receiving yards in a game with 240.
Yeah, it's
that was over, I think it was like, I was listening to Purdue SID. I think he said it was 1980, 1981 that record was set.
That would have been Kirk's first year, I think.
As an assistant.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, it was wild. I mean, every time he threw the ball, you assumed it was going to David Bell. And it was interesting because their first seven plays on that first drive, they didn't target David Bell once. And I think I put in our live chat, I said, yeah, I don't expect that to continue. And again, Matt Hankins, second highest rated cornerback, according to Pro Football Focus, has had a really great year in coverage. David Bell did whatever he wanted to. And Jack Kerner said post-game, they were not trying to allow David Bell in one-on-one situations. But the way that the Purdue offense was spreading out the receivers, you know, going in empty backfield, Iowa not generating pressure. At some point, even if you blanket David Bell for 7-8 seconds, if you're getting no pressure on the quarterback, you're not going to be able to guard David Bell for 12 seconds. That's just not realistic. And again, I think it was a big combination of things, but I mean, Sean, it really felt like every single throw outside of a handful, they were picking apart the zone. These were wide open throws that they were making at times.
Yeah, and a lot of those were, and you know, they were timely plays. You know, I think at one point in the game, Purdue was 8 of 12 on third downs.
Yeah,
that ended up being 9 of 16, but 8 of 12 at any point, you're 8 of 12. That's a very strong number. That's a very impressive number, and that's where Iowa struggled in the past couple of weeks. You know, I don't think they were overly great against Penn State when it came to that.
Yeah.
I think they weren't against, you know, North Texas, Kent State. I'd have to go back and look at those. But, you know, I just think, like, the third down, it's just putting the drives together, the defensive drives together. We talk about the offensive drives and being able to convert, being able to make those bigger plays. But, you know, those chunk plays on third down were such – like some of them were like third and long,
16.
I mean, like it was,
yeah.
You know, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Iowa's QB sneaking on third and one, third and two, but if you're getting 15, 16 yard completions on third down, if you're allowing those, that's concerning.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point too, Sean. Because I know you had talked about that with me last week during the game when Penn State was hitting that. I'd love to see the numbers over the past 2 years because it really seems like Iowa's bread and butter for over the years has been really stopping teams on third down.
Yeah.
And for as good as this defense is and as good as they have been, they have not done that over the past few weeks. And going forward, I mean, you know, for as bad as Wisconsin's offense has been, You can't allow that to happen. I mean, Minnesota, Sean, that could end up being one of the crucial games in this the rest of Iowa's schedule. Minnesota, fresh off a big win against Nebraska. Minnesota's sitting second place in the Big Ten West. Yeah. I mean, these are crucial games coming up. And I think Iowa hitting the bye week, it really couldn't have come at a better time. And Jack, you know, I'm going back to Jack Kerner. Jack Kerner said they, you know, kept picking apart coverages, switching coverages. They were going cover two, cover three, doing different things. But again, I really do think for as much as Iowa didn't execute, you have to give Purdue a lot of credit. I thought their game plan on both sides of the ball was tremendous. Iowa didn't shy away from giving them credit. And Seth Benson just said, look, I can't wait to go back in the film room. We have a lot of stuff to correct. And, you know, they were almost lost for words for the most part. I mean, we only talked to four players. Spencer Petras just said, I need to be a lot better. I was forcing things. And, you know, it's something that I'm curious about, Sean, as we head in the bye week. We'll talk about this in our podcast, but I want to preface this now. How does Iowa reset from a game like that when, you know, entering this week, Spencer Petras said, you know, that first game against Purdue really bothers me. He said it bothered him still because that was his first career start. It didn't do much. He said, that's always kind of haunted me in the back of my mind. Now, after throwing four picks, granted, a couple of them in garbage time, but it's still the stats. Is this loss going to bother him going forward? And how does he mentally bounce back from that? Because it's not even just like, it's not like they're coming back in 7 days. They have a week where it's going to fester. Is he going to be able to flush that out and learn from it? Or is it going to be something that's going to linger on?
I'll leave you with a bigger question. I think this one is interesting. I know Iowa's had offensive weaknesses this year. But were their offensive weaknesses exposed even more today with the defense not playing to its caliber?
I think so. And, like, yeah. I think that's a good point. I think there's obviously a lot of questions about the stats, don't lie. And I think people did know it was bad. But it doesn't matter when the other facets of the game are playing as well as they do. And, you know, the wins and losses are really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters. Doesn't matter how you get them. That's what you're going to be judged on. But like you said, I think that's an excellent point about that. But Iowa's offense traditionally has been opportunistic, but they did not win the field position battle today. They weren't set up in that many good opportunities outside of the garbage time, the big returns and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, Torrey Taylor didn't have a good day. I want to see what happened on Caleb Shudak's field goal, though, that 25-yarder. That was just a really weird, you know, kick when that whole thing went down. But, yeah, and I think, you know, for Petras and those guys – they're going to have to take a long look in the mirror and really, I think they've been really good at honestly evaluating themselves this year, Sean. But it's going to be put up or shut up time for these final five games. I think this is a week, next week, where they can really start looking at the big picture of things and really start to realize what they can still do. And they're right. People don't want to hear it. Everything's still in front of them. I mean, even the college football playoff, as crazy as that sounds, every single thing outside of an undefeated regular season is still in front of them.
Yeah, and, you know, you can decide whether or not to cut this out or not, but I'm gonna put a verbal meme up there. Verbal meme, always has been meme, with the astronaut pointing the gun to the guy's head, with the first guy saying, looking at a picture of, like, the Purdue defense being like, wait, the Purdue defense is good? And, like, Jeff Brohm, the guy behind him with the gun, being like, always has been. I was thinking of that, like, for the last 5 minutes. But I couldn't think of, like, a solid, like, one to come up with. But I thought that was pretty
cool. That's pretty good.
But wait, what were you asking about the...
I mean, I think it's going to be a big look-in-the-mirror thing for Iowa. You know, how do they come back from that? Are they going to are they going to fester in it, or are they going to be able to bounce back? Because now it's the big picture. Now are they going to allow their mind to continue? Will they be able to come back from it? How are they going to come back from it? Because, again, Sean, the reality is, this team has everything in front of them still outside of an undefeated regular season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. And, you know, they talk about loving to go – they'd love to go 7-0. But, you know, just – that's not how it works sometimes with some of the things. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people would be excited to be 6-1 at this point. But if the loss to Purdue, that makes it a little worse. And we talk about – I want to go back to 2019. I thought – the Michigan game, this had a lot of similarities to that 2019 game. And I was looking up, I kind of gave a weird answer there because I was looking up the stats to something else. So Iowa, after that Michigan loss, they lost to Penn State at home, 17-12. Then they went on to beat Purdue, Northwestern, lost to Wisconsin at Wisconsin, beat Minnesota, beat Illinois, beat Nebraska, and then beat USC in the Holiday Bowl. I think this team will be able to bounce back. But I think there are some things that really need to be honed in on during the bye week. And if they're not, then I think it's a valid reason to be a little bit concerned that this game was an indicator of some of the weaknesses that Iowa may not be able to overcome. But you're not going to be playing David Bell every game. But if you want to go to the next level,
yep,
you're going to be playing up against receivers like David Bell.
I will say this. I think there's three things I'd hone in on. Establishing the run game,
yep.
You got to get Tyler Goodson going. He's your biggest playmaker in space this season. And I'll go as far as to say, Sean, reevaluate the depth chart at certain positions. Take a bye week, go through almost a retraining camp-like, and don't be afraid to make changes because, again, this team has a shot to do what it wants to do now. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, where they can go. But I would say reevaluate the depth chart, establish the run game, and find a way to create some pressure on quarterbacks. As great as Iowa secondary is and the linebackers have been covers this season, Sean, you can't allow a guy to sit in the pocket for as long as they did. And, I think there's a lot of young talent on Iowa's defensive line. But at some point, you got to find a way to throw some new wrinkles in there. But like you said, you're not playing David Bell every week. But there are certain things that have to change. And I'll say this, too. Iowa's got to get more aggressive offensively and learn how to really execute some aggressive plays after a big play works. Think of the Keegan Johnson one, the 38-yarder. 38-yard, beautiful, right? Boom, boom, boom. They end up throwing a pick. But they did nothing after that. They didn't utilize that momentum. They threw two dead run plays, then threw a pick. That can't happen. They got to keep staying aggressive and attacking the weakness of the defense, and they haven't done a good job of that this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. That's a good point. That needs to be something you can build on. You need to be able to build on those things to, you know, continue that momentum and continue that sort of just upward trajectory and just keep that consistency because we have not seen it except for the Maryland game maybe this year.
Sure. Well, I know, Sean, you and I will rewatch the tape and probably discuss it during the bye week, and then we'll talk more big picture stuff. Plenty of post-game stuff at HawkeyeInsider.com. We'll have more coverage tomorrow and throughout the week. But be sure to follow us on Twitter, at David Eichel, at SBlock247, and at Hawkeyes on 24/7. And as always, stay tuned to HawkeyeInsider.com, part of 24/7 Sports. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Swarmcast, and we'll talk to you in a few days.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.